memories.
Hello, my friends. It's June 20th, 2022. You are tuned into Canadian Patriot Radio, and I am your host, Critch. Been off the air a little bit here as of late. As you guys know, I'm just a busy guy lately. So my apologies for being a little bit sparse on the shows here. I was attempting to sell, excuse me, my place, and then I learned that the fascists that masquerade as liberals were going to hit me with a 43% capital gains tax. Yeah. So I decided to say fuck that and keep the place that I'm currently on until I can figure out how to structure things so this corrupt runaway train of a criminal entity calling itself the government doesn't come and steal half my flow from the sale of my place. So what are we going to do today, my friends? We are going to cover the fact that the government is now changing the fully vaccinated definition. We got the FDA allowing vaccines for kids under five. There's a new children's book out that's a bestseller that you probably heard of that is basically an anti-Trudeau children's satire book, which is great. We're going to cover the fact that Canadians are losing trust in their media. And then we are going to turn it over to Vladimir Putin. We're going to listen to the speech that he said on Friday. Very interesting rhetoric. I want you guys to hear this because I've read it. And, you know, this guy speaks better than any of our Western politicians. All of them combined, actually. And then you've got that boat anchor that is the installed puppet president, Pete O'Joe there, that makes the average of the rest of them all the way to the bottom of the floor. And I mean, Trudeau was doing a pretty good job of being a front man idiot until Biden came along and said, whoa, hold my beer. Oh my God. Anyway, let's get into this first article, my friends. This one comes to us by way of Global News, and the title reads COVID-19, Canada to update its fully vaccinated definition. This is by Teresa Wright, and it was written on June 14th, 2022. The federal government plans to change its definition of what it means to be fully protected against COVID-19 to reflect advice that a number of health experts have been recommending for months, including Canada's top doctors. Currently, federal employees are considered fully vaccinated if they have two doses of one of Health Canada's approved vaccines. On Friday, Dr. Teresa Tranny Tam told reporters during a briefing, the COVID-19 vaccine efficacy wanes significantly over time, from 50 to 80% effectiveness down to 20% or lower 6 months after the second dose. They literally are admitting it now. Oh, but run out and get your third, right, friends? That's why she has recommended that any official language encouraging Canadians to be vaccinated should not emphasize a specific number of doses, but rather say Canadians should be up to date with their COVID-19 vaccines. A mandate is a policy decision that takes account many different factors, and it's up to the policymakers at this time to make that difficult decision. But I would always be going with recommending up to date, Tam said Friday, referencing a preference policy wording. It always comes down to wording, doesn't it, my friends? Especially when you're thinking in terms of legalese. The difficulty, I think, right now is that the federal definition of vaccine mandates for administrative or travel or other purposes is not up to date, and I am encouraging everyone to adopt the definition. On Tuesday, federal cabinet ministers said they indeed plan to implement this policy change. Although two doses still protect significantly well against severe disease and death, two doses are not enough to protect against infection and transmission. That is why we are in transitioning now to an up-to-date vaccine definition of what it means to be adequately protected against COVID-19. Health Minister Jean-Yves Duclos said Tuesday during a press conference in Ottawa. It's funny, you know, I always point this out. Within a couple of paragraphs, they will completely contradict themselves and make themselves look like idiots. And this is just another prime example. They flat out tell you that the vaccines drop to 20% or lower in 6 months. We know it's even less than that. It's like, what, 12% or 14% is all it does after like 14 days. But anyway, and then a couple paragraphs down, although two doses still protect significantly well against severe disease and death, well, you just admitted it doesn't. So thanks for coming out. However, it could take several weeks or months to implement this policy change due to work that must be done with provinces and territories who have responsibility for health policy, Duclos says. He sidestepped questions on why it has taken so long to commit to this change, even as health experts have been recommending this update for several months. We can tell you why, because it's what? At the time, it was probably only 54.6%, or is it 56.4% of Canadians have the third dose, and the bulk majority of that is baby boomers. And then when you start dropping down into age demographics, you get into Gen X and the millennials and Gen Y, and you start seeing the fact that they aren't buying it. They're not buying it. A lot of them, like we've said in the past, got sick from the first or second shot, and they are saying never again. So you can change this as much as you want, but I still think you're a lot of your people that signed up initially are going to say, fuck that. On Tuesday, Ottawa also announced it is pausing its vaccine mandate for employees in the public service and will no longer require employees in the federally regulated air, rail, and marine transportation sectors to be fully vaccinated effective June 20th, today. That means civil servants who were placed on unpaid leave due to a failure to disclose their vaccination status or a refusal to get vaccinated against COVID-19 can return to work as of that date, Treasury Board President Mona Fortier announced during the same press conference Tuesday. I honestly think a lot of these people probably aren't going to go back. I think now that they've been stabbed in the back by their unions and double-crossed by their employers, I'm guessing a lot of these people went and found jobs where that didn't require you to take experimental medical procedures to work there. However, the ministry's warned vaccine mandates and other COVID-19 health measures being lifted in recent days and weeks could return if the situation changes in Canada, particularly if a variant of concern emerges and begins to spread. Duclos said health officials plan to spend the summer months shifting their focus to trying to encourage more Canadians to get vaccinated and boosted. He cited data provided by TAM Friday that demonstrated that although the vaccine doesn't provide the same level of immunity against contracting Omicron variants of the virus, it does decrease severe outcomes and hospitalization rates. they are worse off than anybody that's actually hasn't had the shots. That's the honest to God truth. You guys have heard me repeat this so many times, I'm just not going to do it again, but we do know that they are actually more susceptible after getting especially three shots to not just COVID, but every other illness that known to man, including vaccine-induced AIDS. Carrying on, we will do that because we know in the summertime there will be fewer cases, fewer hospitalizations, Duclos says. That's the right time for Canadians not only to pause and deserve a summer break, but also to think about how better be prepared individually and collectively for the fall season. Yeah, no. I don't know, this probably doesn't surprise any of you. It didn't surprise me when they announced this. I guess I shouldn't say completely. I guess I thought they were going to wait till if they could get over 50, you know, the 50s into 60s. But I think they pretty much have to march this narrative forward because they're committed. They're effed. They know it. They've got to keep marching forward. And at this point, pretty much the entire public, even those that got the shots, are all laughing in their face. So it's not going to be as successful as they're hoping. I honestly think people are done with COVID. And the only people that don't seem to realize that are the political and the politicians and the media. Anyway, my friends, let's get the show started. We'll be right back. Welcome, friends, to Canadian Patriot Radio, where conspiracy is not theory and political corruption finds the spotlight. We'll be right back. At CPR, we are committed to upholding Canadians' God-given rights to life, liberty, and freedom. With all thy sons, command. Welcome back, my friends. I want to kind of direct your attention to the fact that common sense seems to be hitting the masses now. It's too bad it took what it did to start waking them up. But this next article comes to us by way of the Epoch Times, and the title reads, Canadians increasingly losing trust in media, study finds. This is by Isaac Tao, and it was written on June 18th, 2022. A study on how people globally engage with the news found that Canadians are increasingly losing trust in the media. A report released Wednesday by the Reuters Institute for the Study of Journalism found that Canadians who place their trust in the news fell from 58% to 42% over the last 4 years. The study is based on an online survey of 93,432 people conducted in 46 countries at the end of January and the beginning of February by YouGov, a UK-based market research company on behalf of the Institute. Canada ranked 18th in overall trust out of the 46 countries surveyed, which included Australia at 20, the UK at 36, and the United States taking the last spot. Large numbers of people see the media as a subject to undue political influence, and only a small minority believe most news organizations put what's best for society ahead of their own commercial interests, wrote Rasmus Klein Nielsen, director of Reuters Institute, in the report. Among the Canadian respondents, only 29% indicated that the media is free from undue political influence, compared to 39% in 2017. And a majority of 73% believe the media is not exempt from undue business influence, and an increase of 9% percentage points since 2017. The report added that dissatisfaction with governments and pandemic fatigue may have contributed to the negative attitudes towards the media, and the perceptions that the media outlets have not been critical enough of official sources such as public health authorities. A February study by consultancy firm Edelman Canada found that 61% of Canadians believe journalists and reporters purposely try to mislead them by saying things they knew are false or gross exaggerations, with business leaders 60% and governments 58% not far behind. In addition, less than half of Canadians view government leaders and CEOs as trustworthy, at 43% and 36% respectively, said the Edelman report, which is based on an online survey of over 1,500 Canadians during the period of November 1st to 24th, 2021. Meanwhile, the Reuters report noted that people around the world were increasingly avoiding the news that affected their mood negatively, 36%, and those that focused too much on politics and COVID-19, 43%. In Australia, 41% of respondents said they selectively avoided the news, a jump from 30% in 2017. In the UK, the response nearly doubled from 24% in 2017 to 46% in 2022. The increase in the United States was more moderate, with 42% avoiding the news compared to 38% in 2017. To win public trust again, media could try to provide factual information and to simplify language and better explain or contextualize complex stories, the report suggests. The need for reliable information, careful context, and considered debate has rarely been greater, but so too has the desire for stories that inspire and give hope of a better tomorrow, the author said. So just a little bit of encouraging news to see that, a lot of Canadians, not only Canadians, but Brits and Australians are starting to just turn away from the news. The Americans still have the lead, which is great. But I'd like to see more. Obviously, I'd like to see it I would like to see way more than this. And honestly, I believe that it probably is higher than this. But you know, they're only going to give you a specific glimpse. I don't know. I could be wrong there. Maybe this is legit. You know, like you guys have heard me say plenty of times on the show that I've before COVID, I would have bet my house that 65% of Canadians were awake at some level. And then after COVID, now I know that that's way down. Like it's growing all the time. But initially, with the rollout of the vaccines, I'd say we were down to probably below 20%. We're at some level of awakening in their lives. So that was quite the eye-opener for me. I myself was living in a unrealistic bubble. But now the conversations and the people that reach out to me, it actually kind of shocks me. And this is from every age group. That's not just young folks. It's all the way up to people in their 80s are starting to ask the right questions or just engage in conversation with me about, you know, the fact. Because I make it quite public that I do not believe any government rhetoric. I have zero trust in any institution, especially when it comes to governmental institutions or big corporations. Even though you guys hear me defend big oil all the time, I just kind of think that until we have actual, real, viable alternatives to fossil fuels like zero point energy or hydrogen cells, there's really no point in trying to shoot ourselves in the foot with climate policy. And trust me, I don't believe in climate change at all. I didn't believe in global warming. I don't believe in any of it. The only climate change, man-made climate change, that I believe in is geoengineering and HAARP and cloud seeding. That's it. And if you're not going to acknowledge those three programs, then you're not actually acknowledging the major cause of climate change on this planet. Anyway, little mini rant for you guys right there. Okay, my friends, next what I want to do is turn your attention over to True North. And the title reads, Anti-Trudeau Children's Book Tops Amazon Bestseller List. This is by Noah Jarvaez, and it was written on June 13th, 2022. The Anti-Trudeau Children's Satire, How the Prime Minister Stole Freedom, is a top-selling book on Amazon Canada. The book, a political spin on Dr. Seuss's How the Grinch Stole Christmas, satirizes Justin Trudeau's clampdown on free speech through COVID-19 measures and the invocation of the Emergencies Act to end the Freedom Convoy protest. The story is about a main character, an unnamed prime minister bearing a striking resemblance to Justin Trudeau, who hates freedoms, believes Canadians exist to serve him, and imposes mandates and rules while ignoring rights and people's requests. Paralleling the Grinch, the Prime Minister is depicted as a vindictive and sneering while almost being foolish. The book describes him as having a brain three sizes too small. The book includes clever rhymes with hard-hitting commentary about the government COVID-19 response. Many people were fired or took daily swabs for refusing the vaccine over their jobs, one passage reads. The author, Derek Smith, is a video game streamer on Twitch whose authoring experience is limited to a superhero novel. He began writing the political satire with the children's book Let's Go Brandon. Smith describes himself as politically neutral and having voted for multiple political parties with varying viewpoints during his time as an adult. Smith was inspired by the Freedom Convoy protests and devastated by the Trudeau government's crackdown on the demonstrators, driving Smith to write the book and employ the help of Knip to illustrate. The book does not mention Justin Trudeau by name, only referencing him as Prime Minister for legal reasons alluded to in the introduction. While the Freedom Convoy ended in January, the books commemorating and celebrating the convoy are beginning to build momentum as this book has. As well as Andrew Lawton's soon-to-be-released The Freedom Convoy, the inside story of 3 weeks that shook the world, political satire in the form of children's books is starting to become a trend. Before publishing How the Prime Minister Stole Freedom, Smith wrote a book called Let's Go Brandon about a boy who couldn't get anything right, meant to mirror U.S. President Joe Biden. Matt Walsh of The Daily Wire released a children's book called Johnny the Walrus, where he satirized transgender ideology. Well, I think it's great. Any way you can expose how stupid this Canadian government, heavy air quotes government, has been acting since 2015 is great. You know, obviously the what they did to the Freedom Convoy protesters in Ottawa is they're never going to live that down. That was the start of the end of the Liberals. But it's just great to see any type of anti government speech in the sense of like satire and stuff like this. I absolutely love it and welcome it from every angle. All right, my friends, what I want to do next is turn your attention over to a New York Post article that was written on June 19th, 2022 by Emily Crane. And the title reads, FDA authorizes COVID vaccines for kids under 5. The Food and Drug Administration on Friday authorized the first COVID-19 shots for infants and preschoolers, paving the way for vaccinations to begin as soon as next week. The authorization, which still has to receive final approval from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, means American kids under 5 will now be eligible for the COVID vaccine, some 18 months after the shots became available to adults. Pfizer's vaccine was authorized for children ages 6 months to 4 years, while the Moderna shot was given the green light for children ages 6 months to 17 years, according to the FDA. The Pfizer shot had already been authorized for those over 5 years. Children under 5 years, roughly 18 million youngsters, are the only age group in the U.S. still unable to get the COVID-19 vaccine. The FDA's action comes after its advisory panel unanimously recommended the Pfizer and Moderna shots for kids earlier this week. Let's just pause there and just focus on the fact that you've got this actually happening. We're going to go through a bit more of this article, and then we're going to go to a little clip here, my friends, that won't shock you, but it's basically just facts that are being ignored, and that's how actions like this are still happening. Many parents, caregivers, and clinicians have been waiting for a vaccine for younger children, and this action will help protect those down to 6 months of age, FDA Commissioner Robert Califf said in a statement. As we have seen with older age groups, we expect that the vaccines for younger children will provide protection from the most severe outcomes of COVID-19, such as hospitalization and death. Meanwhile, in the real world, kids are not getting sick with COVID at all. So this is just fear-driven paranoia. The parents that are going to do this, oh my God, they are going to regret this decision for the rest of their lives. We'll put it that way. While young children generally don't get as sick from COVID-19 as older kids and adults, their hospitalizations surge during the Omicron wave. Studies from both Moderna and Pfizer showed some side effects in youngsters, including fever and fatigue, were mostly minor. Oh, we've heard this before. The CDC vaccine advisors are set to discuss the vaccines for youngsters on Friday, and a vote is scheduled for Saturday. CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky, who will give the final sign-off, told a Senate hearing on Thursday that her staff would work over the Juneteenth federal holiday. Oh, God, I can't even start with that. Because we understand the urgency of this for American parents. Pfizer's vaccine for those under 5 years is 1/10 the adult dose and is administered in 3 shots. Moderna is 2 shots, each a quarter of the adult dose for youngsters. Okay, my friends, next, now we're going to go and we're going to learn about the all-cause mortalities of the shots in the kids older than this age group. So let's turn it over to, which doctor is this now? I can't remember. Damn it. Oh, well, let's listen anyway.
The first 4 or 5 months of children getting the vaccine experimentally showed, sadly, a 5,200% elevation in all causes of mortality in children who got the double vax. And of course, they died quietly in their sleep. They died while playing basketball or soccer. They died of quote-unquote unknown reasons. But the numbers, you can't go against it. If a group of children are 52 times more likely to die compared to the opposite group, and one is vaccinated and one isn't, the rest of the world would like it, I suppose, if the unvaccinated were dying 52 times more often. But it's not the case. It's the opposite. It's the vaccinated children, 10 to 14 years old, that first study proved were, relatively speaking, dropping like flies compared to the non-vaccinated children. What happens when they add in January, February, and March of this year? The number went from 52 times to 81 times. So what's the next number? A 10,000% elevation as opposed to 8,100%, which is at right now. And by the way, the more immune you are, the younger you are, which means you have a basic natural immune cells and you have very, very good T8 cells. Your lymphocytes, if you have a strong immune system, they go crazy trying to attack the nasty stuff that's in the vaccine. It means they're going to the aorta, they're going to the spleen, they're going to the ovaries, they're going to the brain, and the body is attacking itself. Your children are going to be attacked internally and are being attacked internally by these reactions. But this is not a vaccine. I refuse to call it that anymore. It is an IDI. It's an immune damaging injection, and it's affecting lifespan. It's affecting cancer latency. It's affecting any number of things, including, of course, the myocarditis that is taking many, many, many of our youths and our 20-something adults. The youngest are at most risk from this. It's 400% in children 15 to 19. It's 52 to 8,100% in children 10 to 14. And I shudder to wait and see what the numbers are going to be if they ever give significant numbers of medication to 5 to 10-year-olds. Mom and Dad, stop. Don't do it. We have to stop them. We're the humans who are trying to live. We're the ones who want our children to not be infertile in the future. For every child that dies, what if 20 to 1 are getting affected in terms of their fertility?
Dr. Chris Shoemaker. That's the doctor's name. So there you have it. The all-cause mortality is going through the roof in the children that they've already been shooting up with this crap. And those are the older age groups. That was the teen groups. He still doesn't have the information of the 5 and under group. So this is going to be catastrophic, giving it to children, especially 6 months to 5 years. This is, oh my God. I can't believe we're watching this, but this is the upside down clown world that we live in. And I guess natural selection is taking over. I don't know how else to describe it. You know, let's listen to another clip here, my friends. It's an underwriter for an insurance company that's going to give you basically the statistics for adults now. Let's listen to this so we can just kind of just see how this is really actually going.
100% increase in all-cause morbidity and mortality. That means something systemic has caused this problem. So you would see a natural, actually an abnormal increase in all-cause cancer, heart issues, inflammation issues, blood clotting. And I can actually send you what that looks like on a per malady basis. But when you see all of them arising to hundreds of percentiles in a class of people who are physically fit from 1845, these are all military people, there is only one cause for that, and that is the destruction of their immune system. So that is the vaccine-induced autoimmune deficiency syndrome. We know this now. In fact, it's in science all around, and the Israelis, they're ahead of everybody else. They already published papers on this. Everybody knows that. So the short answer to this whole thing is that everybody that got the shots was given some form or level of AIDS. Autoimmune deficiency syndrome. The ones that got the one shot, it seems that they have about 30% of their natural immunity destroyed. By the time they get three shots, all their natural immunity is completely gone. And we're seeing that with our doctors, experts that are testifying in their practices, including on base and off base doctors that have come to see us. The real epidemic is now. I happen to be in the morbidity business. I'm the CEO of a large insurance group, and we underwrite morbidity risks, principally disability, accident, sickness, and health. Based on what it is we are seeing, the rates right now, excess mortality at 84%, excess every kind of disease at 1,100%, we are expecting a 5,000 or so percent increase in excess mortality for this year.
100%. A 5,000% increase in excess mortality? Holy, it's not going well for adults either, is it, my friends? Not going well at all. This is just information that, you know, is not being covered, of course, by the mainstream media. So it's giving those that are still buying into the rhetoric, I guess, deniability. It won't be until these people start seeing their friends and family falling over dead will they start admitting that there could be something wrong. So until that starts happening to absolutely everybody, which it will, with a 5,000% increase in all-cause mortality, every single person on the planet is going to have friends or family that fall over dead for one reason or another. Now, there'll probably be plausible deniability because they can probably pass it all off as natural causes. This will be cancers, heart attacks, strokes, you name it, everything, fast-acting Alzheimer's, all the stuff we're already seeing. But it will give these people, those that are still bought into the narrative, just enough to deny the connection to the shots. Even though it's going to be unprecedented how many people we're going to be burying in the next probably fucking 3 years. But, and then these people that are actually, that, like, I'm thinking of one person in particular that I'm arguing with steadily on the socials. He himself will probably fall over dead, and then I won't have anybody to argue with about this, and I'm going to be bored. Oh, shouldn't say it like that, but I just don't have a lot of faith in how long these people will survive. I really don't. All right, friends, now it's time to shift our focus to away from COVID, and I want to shift our focus over to what the leader of the Eastern world is telling his friends and his people. Okay, this comes to us by way of C Prime Feed, and the title reads, Full Text of Vladimir Putin's Speech at SPIEF, June 17th, 2022, Transcript. This is by, just says Brown, and it was written on June 17th, 2022, or... Yeah. Okay, let's get into this, my friends. I think you're really going to enjoy this. Okay, so this is Putin himself. I greet the participants and guests of the XXV St. Petersburg International Economic Forum. It takes place at a difficult time for the entire world community, when the economy, markets, and the very principles of the global economic system are under attack. Many commercial, productive, and logistical ties that were previously interrupted by the pandemic are now undergoing new tests. Furthermore, key business concepts such as business reputations, sanctity of property, and trust in world currencies has been fundamentally undermined, sadly undermined by our partners in the West, and this is done intentionally out of ambition in the name of preserving outdated geopolitical illusions. Today, ours, when I say ours, I mean the Russian leadership, has its own vision of a situation in which the world economy finds itself. I will dwell in detail on how Russia is acting in these conditions and how it's planning its development in a dynamically changing environment. A year and a half ago, speaking at the Davos Forum, I once again emphasized that the era of the unipolar world order is over. I want to start with this. There is no escape. It is over despite all attempts to preserve it. For any medium. Changes are a natural course of history, since the diversity of civilizations on the planet, the richness of cultures is difficult to combine with political, economic, and other patterns that do not work here, patterns that are rudely with no alternative taxes from a center. With no alternative taxes from a center. The defect lies in the very idea, according to which there is one, albeit strong, power with a limited circle of approximate, or, as they say, states admitted to it, and all the rules of turnover and international relations, when becomes necessary. They are interpreted exclusively in the interest of this power, and they say they work in one direction. The game goes in one direction. A world based on such dogmas is definitely unsustainable. The United States, having declared victory in the Cold War, declared themselves the messengers of the Lord on Earth, who have no obligations but only interests, and these interests are declared sacred. They do not seem to realize that new powerful centers have formed on the planet in recent decades and are becoming louder and louder. Each of them develops its own political system and public institutions, implements its own models of economic growth, and of course, has the right to protect them to guarantee national sovereignty. We are talking about objective processes, about truly revolutionary tectonic changes in geopolitics, the global economy, in the technological sphere, in the entire system of international relations, where the role of dynamic and promising states and regions is increasing significantly, whose interests can no longer be ignored. I repeat, these changes are fundamental, pivotal, and inexorable. And it is a mistake to believe that the time of turbulent changes can, as they say, sit back and wait, that supposedly everything will return to normal. Everything will return to the way it was before. I will not do it. However, it seems that these ruling elites of some Western states are in this kind of illusion. They do not want to notice obvious things, but stubbornly cling to the shadow of the past. For example, Western dominance in global politics and economics is believed to be an eternal and immutable value. Nothing is eternal. Furthermore, our colleagues do not simply deny reality. They are trying to counter the course of history. They think in terms of the last century. They are captives of their own delusions about countries outside the so-called golden billion. They consider everything else to be periphery, their backyard. They still treat them like colonies. And people who live there are considered second-class people because they are considered exceptional. If they are exceptional, everyone else is second-class. Therefore, an irresponsible desire to punish, financially crush those who stand out from the general ranks, they do not want to blindly obey. Furthermore, they rudely and shamelessly impose their own ethics, views on culture, and ideas on historically and sometimes question the sovereignty and integrity of states. Excuse me. Creating a threat to their existence. Suffice it to recall the fate of Yugoslavia, Syria, Libya, and Iraq. If some rebel cannot be harassed, pacified, then attempts are made to isolate him or, as they say now, cancel. Everything is used, including sports, the Olympic movement, the prohibition of culture, masterpieces of art, for the sole reason that their authors are of wrong origin. This is the nature of the current bout of the Russophobia, I guess it's trying to say, in the West, and the senseless sanctions against Russia. Crazy and, I would say, thoughtless, their number, as well as the speed of stamping, is unprecedented. The calculation was clear, brazenly, with one blow, to crush the Russian economy. Due to the destruction of trade chains, the forced withdrawal of Western companies from the Russian market, the freezing of national assets to hit industry, finance, and the standard, to live from people. Interesting that he says the forced withdrawal of Western companies. Who forced them? Did Russia force them, or did our own communist government force them? Realistically, like, I'm just stepping out here for a minute. It doesn't really make sense. Like, when you think about, like, McDonald's pulling out of Russia, that was a pretty stupid move, if you want my honest to God opinion. Like, that's a big blow to their global economy. For McDonald's to do that. But I guess these woke companies are just going to go along. But, you know, it's interesting that Putin himself is saying that the forced withdrawal. So maybe they didn't have a choice. Very interesting. Very interesting. There's a lot in here to unpack. So let's carry on. It didn't work, obviously. It didn't work. It didn't take place. Businessmen and Russian authorities worked in a focused and professional manner. Citizens showed solidarity and responsibility. We are going step by step, normalizing the economic situation. First, we stabilize the financial markets, the banking system, and the commercial network. Then they began to saturate the economy with liquidity and working capital to maintain the stability of companies and businesses, employment, and jobs. The gloomy forecasts about prospects for the Russian economy, which sounded in early spring, did not come true. At the same time, it is clear why this propaganda campaign was inflated, where all these spells about a dollar for 200 rubles and about the collapse of our economy as a whole came from. All this was and remains an instrument of information warfare, a psychological impact factor in Russian society, in domestic business circles. By the way, some of our experts succumbed to such external pressure. In their forecast, they also proceeded from the inevitable collapse of the Russian economy and the critical weakening of the national currency, the ruble. Life has refuted such predictions. However, I would like to emphasize and would like to point out that in order to continue to achieve success, we must assess the situation and honestly and realistically as possible, while being independent in our own conclusions and, of course, believing in our own strength. This is very important. We are strong people, and we can handle any challenge. Like our ancestors, we will solve any problem. This is demonstrated by an entire millenary history of our country. Literally 3 months after the massive sanction package, we suppressed the rise in inflation. After peaking at 17.8%, as you know, inflation is now at 16.7% and continuing to decline. The economic dynamic is stabilizing. Public finances are stable. Then I will make a comparison with other regions. Yes, it's too much for us. Of course, 16.7% is high inflation. We must work with this, and we will, and I'm sure that we will achieve a positive result. According to the results of the first 5 months of the year, the federal budget was executed with a surplus of 1.5 trillion rubles, and the consolidated budget with a surplus of 3.3 trillion rubles. At the same time, the federal budget surplus in May alone amounted to almost half a trillion rubles, more than four times the figure for May of last year. Today, our task is to create the conditions to increase production, increase supply in the domestic market, and in balance with growth in supply, restore financial demand and bank credit to the economy. Oh my God, listen to, wouldn't you love to have a leader like this over here? Like, oh my God, look at what he's doing for his country. Already said, we have taken special measures to replenish the working capital of companies, including businesses in almost all industries, receive the right to defer insurance premiums for the second quarter of this year. And at the same time, manufacturing companies have more opportunities. They will be able to take advantage of the delay in the third quarter. In fact, we are talking about an interest-free loan from the state. In the future, deferred payments of insurance premiums will not have to be paid, as they say, all at once. This can be done in equal installments within 12 months, starting in June of the next year. Further away, since May, the rate of preferential mortgages has been reduced. Now it's 9%. At the same time, this preferential mortgage program itself has been extended until the end of this year. I have already said the purpose of such measures is to help citizens solve housing problems, support construction and related industries, and we will employ millions of workers there. After a sharp rise in the spring, interest rates in the Russian economy are gradually falling. The central bank lowers the key rate. In this sense, I consider it possible to lower the rate of preferential mortgages now to 7%. But what would you like to pay attention to? The duration of the program remains the same until the end of the year. This means that those of our citizens who want to improve their living conditions with this benefit must use it before the end of this year. The maximum amount of loans is also preserved, 12 billion rubles for Moscow and St. Petersburg, and 6 million rubles for the other subjects of the Federation. To be continued. So, that's the news coming out of Russia, and I gotta say that it is probably the most... I mean, we haven't heard a speech like that since Trump. Like, he almost echoes the Trump rhetoric. Like, he is all for... He actually does things for the Russian people to keep them employed and to keep them to keep their debts low. And to hear how he's actually addressing, companies with their insurance not having to pay their insurance premiums. Like, they're basically waiving their insurance premiums, which are, you know, astronomically high for some companies. Trust me, I know. Look at the stuff he's trying to do to limit their inflation. You can't get nothing like that is happening over here. Nothing at all. We basically have a government that's just pretending they're doing great. not just in Canada, but in the U.S. as well. You basically have installed puppet president Joe Biden wandering around the U.S. saying that everything's great, and it's because of them that everything is great, completely unaware of where inflation is at in his country. And the same goes with Trudeau and Freeland. It's sickening. It's something else. But also, you know, when listening to a speech from Vladimir Putin, he lays it out. And I really do like the fact that he's basically attacking the globalists. The unipolar. How he's saying that the unipolar world is over. There is no escape. It's over despite all attempts to preserve it. That's awesome. That, you know, and that's the same kind of speech that you used to hear from President Donald Trump. So, what do you think? What do you think about what Vladimir Putin is saying to his people? Like, can you imagine if we had a leader that spoke that way to us here? If we actually had a leader? We don't have leaders. We have globalist frontmen. But no wonder... No wonder Russians stand behind him, because during a time like this, where there's a conflict in the Ukraine, and his people could easily turn against him on a dime, you know, if this got really bad for them, he's doing things to make sure that his people are looked after. They knew damn well that the Western world would chastise them and single them out, which is exactly what they did. Meanwhile, funding. Nazi battalions in Ukraine and gangs and criminals, arming gangs and criminals in Ukrainian cities, and then having all their weapons and money, especially the weapons, ending up on the black market and financing criminal organizations and money laundering all of our tax dollars through Ukraine into their own pockets. Now, let's just do a little quick compare and contrast with our own heavy air quotes leader of our country, our finance minister, Chrystia Freeland. And let's see how she acts when it comes to everything, the economic situation in Canada. This next one comes to us by way of Global News, and the title reads, Freeland defends budget after Scotiabank accuses feds of doing nothing on inflation. This is by Craig Lord, and it was written today, June 20th, 2022. A cut in planned government spending could help tame rampant inflation and reduce pressure on the Bank of Canada to hike interest rates, according to a report from Scotiabank. The report from the bank's chief economist, Jean-François Perrault, and modeling director, René Lalonde, claims that Canadian fiscal policymakers are doing nothing of any significance to slow inflation at the moment. The authors argue that cutting government spending will take some of the burden to cool inflation off the Bank of Canada and the private sector. Scotiabank's analysis came as Canadian Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance Chrystia Freeland is met with the head of the U.S. Treasury Janet Yellen in Toronto on Monday to discuss cooperation between the nations and global inflation concerns. The report cites the Bank of Canada's renewed mandate from December of last year, which said tackling inflation is a joint responsibility between the feds and the central bank. While the war with Ukraine and ongoing supply chain pains tied to COVID-19 recovery has been cited as major causes of higher than expected inflation so far in 2022, Perrault told Global News in an interview Monday that prices were on the rise before the Russian invasion. Of course they were. Of course they were. When you have a government this fiscally irresponsible and doling out money in the form of foreign aid, which we all know is actually money laundering, all over the place to the tune of billions upon billions of dollars. it had nothing to do with Ukraine. We were already on this train wreck trajectory long before the Ukrainian invasion happened. In normal circumstances, that's fine. The challenge in the current circumstances is that we have inflation that is a huge issue from the perspective of Canadians. It's well outside what the Bank of Canada wants. It's exceptional. There is no question about it, he said. In this context, he believes the Bank of Canada could benefit from a little help in the form of cooling government spending. Scotiabank projects that if the feds plan to increase their spending 2.5% by the end of 2024 instead of today's planned 4.8% increase, the Bank of Canada could top out its interest rate hike cycle at 2.25%, 75 basis points lower than were Scotiabank's forecast rates will hit by the end of the year. But Freeland, speaking alongside Yellen on Monday afternoon, said she felt the Fed's latest budget does go far enough to limit government spending. She said the rate of fiscal consolidation, the rate at which Canada is paying down its debts, is tied for the fastest in the G7, on par with the United States. What world? What fucking world does this idiot live in? We've watched our national debt explode, absolutely explode, under these fascists that masquerade as liberals. Trudeau has outspent all previous prime ministers combined, by himself, combined. And you got Chrystia Freeland straight-faced telling people that Canada is paying down its debts. It's tied for the fastest in the G7, on par with the United States. What in the fuck? I can't even deal with this level of stupid. I can't. Let's carry on. Well, Freeland reiterated that tamping down inflation is chiefly the job of the Bank of Canada. She said her 2022 spending plan was already a very fiscally responsible budget. Right, because a journalist is going to be all over how to tackle this. She said that was why she stuck with the budget items announced in April rather than announcing new spending last week in her economic update. We understand that fiscal policy has a role to play. That's why we took this decision in April to pursue a path of fiscal tightening, she said. Lies. Lies. Flat out lies. Statistics Canada is set to announce May inflation figures on Wednesday, with at least two major banks expecting a reading of 7.4%, which would be higher than the 6.8% reading for April. Well, I don't even know whether even these numbers are wrong. Look at your grocery bill. Look at your fuel bill. Look at your home heating bill. Look at how much the prices have risen. We're talking in terms of 30 to 40% in some areas. How does that match up with 7.4%? Tell me. It fucking doesn't, because they're goddamn liars. Like, we are well into a recession, my friends. We're right on the verge of a depression. And that's exactly what they want. They want this economy to crash so they can swoop in with their digital currency and save us all. So they're going to lie about where inflation is. And that's exactly what they're doing. Let's carry on. Scotiabank is among a growing chorus of economic forecasters projecting a 75 basis point interest rate hike in the Bank of Canada's next announcement on July 13th, following the steps of the U.S. Federal Reserve, which took an outsized step last week to try and anchor inflation expectations. We think the Bank of Canada will move 75 basis points as well. They don't have much of a choice, Perrault said. Perrault was the speaker who introduced Freeland at her keynote address to the Empire Club of Canada in Toronto last week when she outlined the Fed's plan to help Canadians tackle inflation. The Empire Club, okay. The finance minister announced no new spending plans in that speech, instead touting $8.9 billion in measures from the government's previous two budgets that are now coming into effect. Among these plans are boosts to child care support, old age and workers' benefits, as well as $500 in direct support going to low-income renters. Well, that's nothing. It's nothing. It's nothing. These people tout stupid ideas, and they think they're smart when they say it. Good Lord. Perrault said that it's a tricky political balance to directly support Canadians through rampant inflation because fiscal stimulus tends to raise demand for spending in the long run. By giving people money effectively, whether it's to help adjust inflation or otherwise, you're continuing to fuel that fire. No kidding. Economist Tu Nguyen of RSM Canada told Global News last week that by targeting inflation support measures to vulnerable Canadians, the feds could thread the needle of mitigation inflation for the hardest hit without feeling too much demand. How that plays out in reality remains to be seen, she said. Perrault noted that if the central bank can minimize how high interest rates rise in the years to come, it would mitigate a correction in the housing market. That would mean lower mortgage rates, that it would mean lower costs of financing for Canadians in general, he said. It's certainly less of a financial burden on a part of Canadian households. So when you compare and contrast the two, I'm going to go heavy air quotes, leaders when it comes to Chrystia Freeland, she's not a leader at all. She's just a frontline puppet. We know that. And then you look at how Putin talks to his people. Our so-called leader or governments tries to talk to us like we're children and we don't know anything. So, and then you got Putin that basically lays it out on the line and tells exactly what's going on in his country. I don't know, when it comes to me, I would prefer to have a leader like Putin. Honest to God. Honest to God. Anyway, my friends, that's the better part of an hour, so that's where we're going to end this one. As always, if you'd like to reach out to me, you can find me on Facebook. It's Canadian Patriot Radio. Use the message button. It comes directly to me. If you prefer email, it's CanadianPatriotRadio@gmail.com. I encourage everybody to join the Telegram room, which is t.me/CPR_2. And if none of that is the way you want to go, then find the website, which is CanadianPatriotRadio.ca. As always, thank you so much for tuning in, my friends, and until next time, in all thy sons command. For joining us for another episode of Canadian Patriot Radio. CPR is not filmed before a live studio audience. If you like the show, friends, make sure you give us a thumbs up and share us on all your social media platforms. Until next time, take care.